This is The Headline with Brandon Waltons, bringing you the biggest stories from across Texas. The Headline gives you the news you need to be an informed citizen. Hello, everybody. Happy Friday, and thank you for joining us on this sign-y-die edition of The Headline. I'm Brandon Waltons, the managing editor of Texas Scorecard. We're going to be talking about a few of the big stories from across the state this week that happened in the news. But I want to let you know that if you're watching live on Facebook right now, please feel free to drop down in the comments, where are you watching from? If you have any questions as we're going through, I'd be happy to answer those. But one of the biggest stories happened last night, and that was the surprise adjournment of the Texas legislature, who was meeting during their second special session, decided to adjourn 3 days early ahead of their Sunday deadline, with some of the priorities still left undone. To talk about this right now, I've got Jeremy Kitchen, our Capitol correspondent, who was watching it last night, and I think we talked about it. I mean, look, when I woke up yesterday morning, I didn't think that was going to be the end of the second session.
I'm right there with you. I thought they were going to go kind of until the end, right? Like drag it out. But seemingly, like as the day went on, the remaining things where you kind of got a sense of these are the ones that they've destined, right, are going to pass, started to get done. And you really started to get the feeling that they were kind of wrapping things up. And yeah, it was here we are, right? It's kind of a sigh of relief, to be honest.
Right. I mean, this was, just to recap, I mean, this was a special session that was caused because they didn't get their work done during the regular session, which ended in May. Mm-hmm. They were called back in July. Right. Democrats break quorum. And so they're sitting there for 37 days, essentially, mm-hmm. going into a second session without a quorum. Finally, in the last couple of weeks, enough Democrats had returned. They've been able to work on some stuff. There's still a number of issues left undone, but let's first look through what did get done.
Sure.
Top of the list, I think the issue that really started it all was election integrity.
That's right. An election integrity bill did make it through the process. It's notable. It's different than the one that was offered in the regular session, for what it's worth. But it did get done, and every step of the process, it passed on purely partisan lines.
Right. And so that, passed out of the Senate. The Senate had passed this multiple times.
Right.
But really, it finally made it through the House. They were actually able to get it. So that bill is now at the governor's desk.
Correct.
Another bill that's gone to the governor's desk that was part of his call was border security appropriations, mm-hmm. which I think the details of which are a little murky.
Yeah, for sure. Ultimately, it was an additional $1.8 billion on top of what was already appropriated or put in the budget that just went into effect in September 1st during the regular session. Really what it did was kind of correlate with the executive order that Governor Abbott offered, I believe in May, right, where he kind of directed a certain number of state agencies would be responsible for different elements of what he deemed kind of this border security plan. And so it was really the implementation of that executive order via the legislature and the funding for it.
Running down the list, increased virtual education options. This was something he added to the second special session agenda.
Right, that's right. So I think the agenda item was something to the effect of like dealing with public education in the wake of COVID-19, mm-hmm. right? And like different strategies they can use. The bill that ultimately passed dealing with this was expanding virtual learning options for those that do want to participate in that. Through multiple times during the debate, however, of course, they highlighted that, it was kind of mixed results depending on the parents you talk to as far as like whether that was good or not good for their children, but they had to kind of put some provisions in place to make sure for those that do participate in that it was worthwhile, and so they did that.
Another thing that made it ultimately through kind of in the nick of time was a bill on social media censorship.
Right. Interestingly, they also added email censorship to it. It wasn't something that was in the original bill that failed in the regular session. It wasn't something that was in the original bill that passed out of the Senate multiple times either, but kind of last minute they added email censorship to it. But yes, they finally did get that done, and it's supposed to, we'll see how it's implemented,
sure.
but it's supposed to provide protections for those against censorship, if you will, by social media platforms and the largest email platforms.
Well, it's something we've certainly seen a lot of the big companies like Facebook, like Twitter, use against conservatives. It'll be interesting to see if this is actually a tool that's able to be used against the big companies or whether or not they'll be able to just fight back. Another bill that made it through yesterday was a critical race theory ban improvements. I actually kind of would say it was more of a, a revision. There were some improvements in the bill, right? You had a critical race theory ban, kind of put that in quotes, that was passed during the regular session that had a lot of problems, and really a lot of folks said it didn't go far enough. This put a little more teeth into it. It adds some transparency for parents to be able to look at curriculum. But, you know, some people are actually concerned about some of the new provisions.
Yeah, like they added a few provisions, and it is unclear, right? Like for anyone that's followed the critical race theory issue, they never, as they'll tell you, right? Like it's never, hey, we teach critical race theory in schools, right? It's never said explicitly. And so it's a difficult issue to kind of like hone in on. There's some interesting stuff that they added to this improvement bill that potentially makes it, I don't know, right? We'll have to wait and see, but potentially makes it to where there's maybe a backdoor for critical race theory, if you will, to still be put into some of the curriculum. So
another issue that did make it through, and I can tell you that lawmakers in both chambers, right, this was probably their number one priority, was restoring their own legislative funding.
That's right, and they to applause, thunderous applause, right, once it was done. And notably, it was kind of the last thing because it was held hostage, right, by the Senate. It was the last thing that they ultimately considered. They did it in kind of a roundabout way where instead of being its own explicit bill, they included it with a whole bunch of supplemental money, right, to go to various agencies and stuff like that based on the updated biennial revenue estimate from the comptroller. But yes, that ultimately got done, and now funding is restored for the legislature, which ultimately means not just legislators, it means like this is legislative staff, agencies, all of that sort of stuff. Yeah.
Okay. And there was additional items on that list. We don't have time to go through all of them, but
sure.
Things like the 13th check for teachers, your dating violence bill, a number of these sort of smaller things, a nuclear waste kind of bill.
Yeah.
A number of those priorities made it through, but there is a list, I think, of things that did not get done. One thing, it wasn't really part of the special session agenda, but there were no penalties for those Democrats that broke quorum.
That's right. Interestingly enough, I mean, kind of depending on where you're at in this issue, you have the original quorum break at the end of May, which kind of prompted this long legislative saga, right? And by the way, again, it's worth reiterating, that quorum break was enabled by House Republican leadership, right? You had that. You had 5 days into the first special session. They broke quorum again. Democrat House lawmakers broke quorum again. They maintained a quorum break for 37 plus days. They come back and you end special session yesterday and not a single penalty has been exacted against absentee.
Well, and despite you had pressure from the Republican Party of Texas, you had, you know, pressure from a number of lawmakers, you really didn't see any pressure notably from the caucus chairman of the Republicans,
right, Jim Murphy,
Jim Murphy, who was not at that press conference last week about pushing for this. And so
they seemingly wanted to appease the absent lawmakers. There were I don't know if the deals were cut or what it was, but they made no bones about it. They did not want to go after them. And they did have resolutions to that effect. They even considered one that would only penalize them in the future, and that didn't even get passed. So
another thing that didn't get passed, despite a lot of attention on the issue, a lot of pressure from activists, was protecting youth sports, specifically,
right,
you know, keeping it to your own biological sex. Something that's been done in Florida.
Yeah.
People thought it would get done in Texas, and where did it get killed?
Notably, this is yet another bill that died in the last few days of the regular session. Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick pleaded with Abbott to put it on a special session call. They ended up doing that. Of course, couldn't deal with it in the first special session. Second special session, again, the Senate passes a bill related to it, and it just sits in the House Public Education Committee, which is chaired by a House Democrat, Harold Dutton, and it never got voted out. It was a very significant casualty of the special session.
A House Democrat who for now will not have to worry about losing his
losing
his committee chairmanship. We also didn't see that. I mean, this issue's been building up. We've seen it as schools started again over the last few weeks. But there was no mask mandate prevention for public schools, despite Governor Abbott actually putting that on the call for the second special session about a month ago. Lawmakers didn't address it. Nothing went to the floor in either chamber.
That's correct. Either chamber. The Senate had only a few bills filed by a Democrat, which would have mandated masks that never went anywhere. The House had a few different bills. Some different bills filed by Republicans, some that would have just outright prohibited it, some, as we saw, as authored by Jeff Leach, where when it got to committee, he was open to compromising with the Democrat House Public Education Committee chairman to allow school districts to mandate it, but hey, it's okay as long as we have an opt-out provision for parents. Those bills ended up not getting considered, even though it was on the special session agenda, and notably, this was an executive order by Abbott's back in July, where he consolidated a bunch of COVID orders, but of course, a year earlier, he himself had mandated these sorts of things, right?
And so, sure. And well, and even though he has his executive order banning them now, we've essentially seen the Texas Education Agency saying, we're not really enforcing that.
Right.
And school districts all over the place right now are putting in
the list keeps
mask
going.
Mandates. Right. And so that issue, you know, remains undone by the legislature. Another issue that remains undone, quorum changes. Okay. This was something that was added was, hey, maybe we can change the 2/3 requirement that allowed, that threshold that allowed Democrats to be able to freeze it. That actually didn't pass either chamber.
That's right. So I think it was a few weeks before this last special session, you had Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick sign a letter, right, requesting that Abbott say, okay, why do we have quorum at 100 or 2/3? Why can't we just have it a simple majority? He added it to the special session call. Both, there were bills filed in both chambers. The Senate notably had they considered a constitutional amendment to change it. They voted and they passed it on the initial reading, but they didn't have enough, 2/3. Mm-hmm. They didn't have enough to support it to get it out of their chamber. The House never even considered their version in committee.
Kind of the ironic thing. They need 2/3 to get it out, to get a constitutional amendment out there. And they actually want to reduce that 2/3 for the quorum. So it was probably doomed from the start.
But what should be noted there, that just to kind of cap that off, is that, like, once again, nothing got done to preclude a quorum break from happening in the future, one, and they didn't change quorum requirements. So, like, this could happen again.
This could happen. Yeah, that could absolutely happen again. A few other things, just real quick, that didn't get done. Local government regulation preemptions, kind of this paid sick leave stuff, these patchwork of regulations on the local level for businesses. That bill was killed in the Texas House on a point of order.
Notably by the former Speaker Pro Tem.
Yeah, yes. Joe Moody, a Democrat himself, right?
Yeah.
Bail reform, top priority of Governor Abbott. They passed part of the bill, but the real heart of it, the constitutional amendment, didn't make it through.
That's right. And it's unclear whether Abbott's going to continue to put that on a special session call.
And lastly, I think the most important, maybe immediate thing that people are going to realize is that there was not really any meaningful property tax relief that came out of this session at all, despite having an extra almost, what, $8 billion.
That's right. There were multiple bills that would have actually provided tangible property tax relief. You're going to have Republican lawmakers already. They're going to go home and say they provided property tax relief. The important takeaway here is they provided property tax relief for select classes of people, one, so not every Texan, and it only applies to certain people at certain times, meaning like the first-year homestead exemption for first-time homebuyers. So it is not lasting property tax relief, and it's barely a dent in the overall problem. So
with the session ended last night. I hate to be the person who asked this question, but is there going to be a third special session? And if so, what should we expect on it?
I think we've heard for months that there will undoubtedly be a special session dedicated to at least redistricting. And that's always been kind of announced to be October. Right. Mm-hmm. What's unclear is whether there's going to be something between then. If I'm a betting man, I'd probably say no, they'll wait until October. I don't know. Right. But the other thing that might be included on that is what to do with some federal COVID relief money that they got back in, I guess, February or March of this year. How to appropriate that would be on there. And then what's unclear is whether some of the stuff that died that was on Abbott's agenda this go around will be added to that, or if it'll just kind of be ignored and we'll pretend that didn't happen. Things like bail reform or youth sports, right?
Which
we just talked about, which Dan Patrick yesterday asked be added to a future special session call. It's unclear, but October's like seemingly what we're kind of shooting for.
Okay, so we could. This is now the time for activists to be telling the governor what they want to see on that special session agenda. I mean, I think we've seen that right now, just due to the politics surrounding the upcoming Republican primary and the challenges he's getting from the right, that he's been pretty responsive to some level of pressure from activists. So now's the time to do that.
I think it's worth noting before we end on this is that, like, even though Abbott didn't include some of the missing Texas GOP legislative priorities, there were bills filed during the special session to that effect, right? Mm-hmm. And the legislature could have passed them and said, okay, ball's in your court, Abbott, will you sign them? And they didn't consider them at all, you know? And so if you're an activist and that's something you want to see, a ban on taxpayer-funded yep. lobbying, a ban on gender mutilation, right? Like, you can still call about that and try to get that put on a would-be future special session call.
Awesome. So. Well, we'll be back here for the third special session. So thank you for recapping all of that. And we'll for sure be looking at what's to come in the weeks ahead. Another issue that happened this week was identified, was related to Abbott. It's actually an agency that Governor Abbott oversees. That's the Department of Family and Protective Services, which it was revealed after former State Senator Don Huffines, who's an opponent of Abbott in the upcoming Republican primary, pointed out that there's actually a webpage dedicated to transgender youth on the department's webpage, and they actually use this video right there on there. And let's take a look at this clip, just a little clip from this.
What's the difference between gender identity and sexual orientation? Another common question is how gender identity impacts sexual orientation. Some people might wonder, if a person is transgender, does that also mean they're gay? To help us understand the difference between gender identity and sexual orientation, physicians who practice in this area remind us that gender identity and sexual orientation are independent characteristics that also typically develop at different times in a person's life.
The formation of gender identity can start very early. This can be one of the first real self-identifying factors that a child might feel.
But transgender children usually have the internal experience of other as transgender or gender non-conforming early in life.
People will tell you that they knew when they were 4 years old. I've heard as young as 18 months old where they knew that they weren't, their gender didn't match their assigned sex at birth.
One of the facts.
Well, the page not only included that video, it also linked to an article on sexual orientation and gender identity definitions hosted by the Human Rights Campaign. If you haven't heard about them, that's a pro-LGBT leftist group. You clicked on the link, literally, it went to their fundraising page, okay? And this is a group that has campaigned against protecting children from gender mutilation procedures in Texas. Again, this is an issue that's been left undone in Texas. Joining me right now to talk about that is Jacob Asmussen, our senior journalist here at Texas Scorecard. It's kind of funny that this agency was actually hosting this content, because they were actually tasked with the governor not several weeks ago with actually determining whether or not these sorts of procedures constituted child abuse.
Yeah, you're right, Brandon. And the overall question right now on this issue is why are these Republican state officials in charge not doing anything to stop this barbaric practice? I mean, we look at the timeline of this issue, right? We trace back a couple years ago when it started getting national attention with the case of James Younger, a 9-year-old Dallas area boy whose mother wanted to force him against his father's wishes to get chemically castrated, right? And so 2 years ago, you had Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton ask the DFPS to investigate the matter. Seemingly no results there. Fast forward to this year, in the spring, the state legislature had several proposed laws that would have protected these children, would have outlawed these procedures of cutting off children's healthy body parts, right? Of giving them sterilizing cross-sex hormones. These laws to protect children, Republicans stopped those from getting passed. Then you have the special session during the summer. Governor Greg Abbott refused to add this priority to legislature's to-do list, even though it was a priority of the Republican Party of Texas. Abbott was silent on this issue the whole time. He finally spoke about it in July and said, shockingly, that the chances of these child protection laws passing the House of Representatives was nil. And then finally, after all of this time, Abbott, quote, does something by sending a letter to the Department of Family and Protective Services asking them to decide if cutting off children's healthy body parts is wrong, is child abuse. And so we have all of that. After all of that, DFPS does not respond. They have this webpage, and still nothing has been done children are still vulnerable.
Well, DFPS said, oh yes, literally the mutilation surgery itself, that's child abuse. We agree with that. They were pressed on the issue, though, by State Representative Brian Slayton, asking, okay, that one procedure is, but what about chemical castration? What about these puberty blockers? What about this psychological counseling?
Yep.
That, and they've been silent on that issue.
Yeah, and so you have this whole issue that's unfolded for 2 years, and these Republican state officials have been playing games the whole time, refusing to actually stop this practice. And meanwhile, you have children like James Younger who are still vulnerable, still facing being potentially sterile for the rest of his life.
Right. And so this agency, they get caught with this video. They have not responded even now. It's been about 3 weeks, I think, to Representative Slayton's letter on clarification. They did, however, respond pretty quickly once this page was put up on TexasScorecard.com. Within hours, they actually took down the page. Now, this morning, they're saying, oh, we're actually reviewing our website looking for different content. So the page is temporarily down, which is just goes to show you, right, how responsive they will be whenever they are exposed.
Right. And again, why is it so difficult for Republican state officials to stop this practice? Why have they not done something in over 2 years?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely amazing. Switching gears a little bit to Texas's capital city, Austin Mayor Steve Adler gave his State of the City address, I think he actually did it from Austin, right? He wasn't in Cabo or Cancun this time. But really said some amazing things in that speech, specifically if you know the background of just how much liberal policies are currently destroying the capital city.
Oh, absolutely. So Mayor Adler earlier this week said that Austin is not only strong, but currently the strongest in the country. Now that comment left a lot of citizens scratching their heads because the Austin city leadership, Mayor Adler of the Democrat-run Austin City Council, have enacted policies over the past couple of years that have absolutely wreaked havoc on the streets. You have several different issues. You have the homelessness crisis, right? 2 years ago, they legalized unrestrained public camping throughout the city, which has caused a public safety disaster. You have last year, they defunded the Austin Police Department by up to $150 million, right? You then have violent crime, homicides at record highs. If it wasn't enough, you have City Hall getting a D rating for their fiscal health by Truth and Accounting. You have them racking up over $2 billion of debt. Taxes are out of control. Families can't afford to live in the city. And so you have all of these different disasters happening at the same time. And yet Mayor Adler says, we're not only strong, but yet the strongest in the country.
Well, and he's talking about other stuff as well, right? I mean, he's mentioning COVID vaccine mandates. He's working right now, we know, to try to force on city employees. And he also mentioned, this is something we covered a while back, you covered at TexasScorecard.com, which is this black embassy.
Yeah, so picture this. We're not in 1950s Jim Crow era. 2021, you have Democrat city officials proud of the fact that they are planning to establish a city facility, a black embassy, they call it, to only service citizens of certain skin colors.
Wow. Well, it wasn't all bad news for Austin citizens this week. Citizens did get a win with Save Austin Now, a citizen group there that's been pushing a ballot proposition, right, to kind of refund the police, which
Absolutely. We've
seen defunded. And they actually got a little bit of a win in the Texas Supreme Court this week.
Yeah, so while city leadership has been enacting their policies, you do have citizens fighting back. This citizen group, Save Austin Now, they already had a successful petition campaign earlier this year. They restored the city's original public camping rules. Mm-hmm. And now, for the November election, they are trying to, like you said, refund the local police department, restore adequate officers to the department, and make some other reforms. They sued the city of Austin earlier this month for the ballot language for the November election because they said city officials had manipulated, they wordsmithed the language to try to sway voters against
We've seen with some ballot propositions in the past, right? You pass the proposition, you get your signatures for the ballot.
Yeah.
Then, you know, it gets on the, they write the language, right? The city council, the city officials that you're going after, and it's written in a way that, oh, it doesn't even really describe the issue.
Yeah, citizens do all this work to submit a petition, and then city officials tinker with it to sway citizens against it. So the Texas Supreme Court, however, this week sided with the citizen group. Mm-hmm. They said Austin abused, quote, abused their discretion in distorting and manipulating this petition effort, this ballot question. And so for the November election, when Austinites go to the polls, they will see the true text, the true question that this citizen group meant for them to see.
Oh, that's excellent. That's a big victory. And ending kind of on a big victory that we also saw this week, at least for now, was not just in the Texas Supreme Court, but at the U.S. Supreme Court.
Yes. Earlier this week, the U.S. Supreme Court decided to allow the Texas Heartbeat Act to continue. And we talked about this before. The Heartbeat Act was a law passed earlier this year, which makes it illegal in Texas to kill a child in the womb after their heartbeat is detected, which is usually around 5 or 6 weeks mm-hmm. gestation. And so even though the law does not protect children in the first few weeks of their life, it does make it illegal for a heartbeat detected child. You had many abortion businesses, abortion advocates suing to try to stop this law from mm-hmm. taking effect. But the U.S. Supreme Court this week said, you know what, no, we're going to deny your request to try mm-hmm. to stop this law. It can stand for now.
And it's written a very interesting way, right, because it is made so that private citizens are actually given a cause of action to be able to sue abortionists and people who aid and abet abortions. And so it's really a unique law. Mm. Interestingly, it was a 5-4 decision. I think people would probably not be surprised to find out that John Roberts sided with the liberals on this one.
Yeah, and that is very disappointing, though perhaps not surprising to see.
Yeah, perhaps expected. If we've actually got an article on that at texasscorecard.com if you missed that news that one of our new fellows, Griffin White, actually wrote yesterday. And so encourage you all to check that out. Thank you so much, Jacob, for covering all those issues with us.
Thank you.
A few announcements, few housekeeping items. Want to let you know that later today, we've got a new podcast up at texasscorecard.com, Texas Autopsy Files on Spending Limits. Okay, that's going up today at 2 p.m. You can find it on Facebook, YouTube, texasscorecard.com. Wherever you get your free podcast, you should probably be able to find it there. Also, if you missed our inaugural episode last week on constitutional carry, absolutely a great little refresher, especially as constitutional carry and a number of laws went into effect this week on September 1st. And also stay tuned next week when we have a new episode out as well. Another thing I want to remind folks about is our Conservative Leader Awards, which are coming up. That's December 4th in Irving, Texas. We've got early bird pricing going on right now at scorecard.com/CLA2021. That's texasscorecard.com/CLA2021. We'll drop that link down if you're watching live on Facebook now. But more importantly, nominations are still open, right? If you know somebody who's deserving of a Conservative Leader Award, please let us know about them. Submit an application. We'd love to consider them and honor them at our upcoming Conservative Leader Awards. And last thing I want to mention is that our Texas Scorecard Fellowship is now accepting applications for spring, summer, and fall of 2022. If you know somebody between the ages of 18 to 25 who wants to be involved here, learn how things work here at Texas Scorecard, actually put their skills to the test and learn a few things in the process, feel free to apply right now. We're looking again for spring, summer, and fall. And you don't have to be in college either. In fact, maybe it's almost preferred. I mean, I don't know. But we got some shout-outs. I want to say hello to everybody watching today, okay? I got Joyce watching from Belton. Marion watching from Rossville. We've got Noah from Tomball. Sharon tuning in from Fort Worth. Steph from Deer Park. And Tiffany from Deer Park as well. Good to see the both of y'all on there. Tara from Bedford. Ruth watching from Cisco. Look, the special session's right. It's done. Maybe we can take a break. We've got a Labor Day weekend, if you celebrate. I mean, some people don't. But we got a Labor Day weekend here. Enjoy it and get ready next week to start engaging in the fight all over again. But for now, thank you so much. Have a great weekend.
Thank you for listening to The Headline from Texas Scorecard. We're live every Friday at 11 a.m. on the Texas Scorecard Facebook page to talk about the biggest stories of the week, so check us out there or listen to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, whatever platform you prefer. While you're there, you can also check out the ever-growing line of podcasts and programming provided by Texas Scorecard.